Welcome to the Hop and Brew School podcast. I'm Justin Crosley. With me today will be Nick Ziegler, but he's gone missing and I needed to get started, and so he'll be here eventually. But you know what? This is serious business, this podcasting.
Oh man, really?
Can't wait. My guest Denny Kahn, a new podcaster, can attest.
new compared to you, but we have done 4 years and 100 episodes.
Yeah, but I have one thing that I've been doing longer than you, Denny, and that's podcasting.
That's true.
So
that's
true. You know what? You're a rookie to me. You're a
thanks,
baby.
Man. I appreciate that. I've been an audio engineer for 50 years.
I know. In fact, my very first homebrewers conference, I had you help me with
sound. That's
sounds.
Right. I remember that, man.
I borrowed a sound system from a friend of mine, which was clearly from the 70s because it was the most giant thing
so
I've ever
right
seen.
Right up my alley.
Yeah. And I was like, Denny, can you help me out?
Well, you know what, man? And the first interview that I was ever asked to do was with you. So
I'm honored
to be back again after all these years.
I love this. Denny Kahn is my guest today, along with my good friend John Palmer.
Howdy, howdy.
And today we're going to be talking about legacy hops, or I could even call them unloved hops, not because brewers don't use them anymore, but because they don't get the love, publicly. We don't talk about them anymore.
They're not retro. They're still cool.
They're not. Yeah exactly. but before we get into that, I do want to bring up Denny Kahn's new book, which is, it's Denny Kahn and my other friend Drew Beecham have written the book, Simple Home Brewing, Great Beer, Less Work, and More Fun.
That's my motto.
But I want to bring something up.
Okay.
In Simple Homebrewing, you guys quote Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. For God's sake, how simple can it be, Denny?
But it works, doesn't it?
It totally works. His quote is, in all the things, the supreme excellence is simplicity.
That's right. That's right, man. Name me one brewery that wants to make things more complicated.
Right. Well, probably most of them. They just do it unintentionally.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's part of the premise of your book, is that in an unintentional way, we just kind of overcomplicate things as a species, really.
Yeah, right.
And homebrewing is one of them. And I think it's important to know, and I want you to elaborate on this for me, but I think it's important to note, you guys aren't talking about dumbing down brewing.
No.
You're just talking about how we can get the same things done in a little more simplistic manner.
Right. A lot of people see that title, Simple Homebrewing, and they think, oh, it's a beginner's book.
Sure.
And what I've discovered after 21 years and 550 batches of homebrew is that it's people who've been brewing a long time that need the concept of simplicity the most.
Right.
You know, because you pick up all these habits and you don't know why you're doing things. Somebody told you this is the right thing to do or something like that. And so you keep doing it, but you never really stop to think about if that's making your beer better, or even more importantly, if it's making your brewing experience more fun.
Yeah.
Because God damn it, we are homebrewers. We are in it for the fun. If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
A lot of this book came about because of something I saw online where somebody posted a question saying, what part of homebrewing do you stress out about most? And I'm going, man, if you're stressing out about anything, you have a serious problem.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So we wrote this book to try and get people to make good beer as easily as possible, have more fun doing it.
Okay.
People are busy. They have jobs. They have families. They don't want to mess around. One of the things I talk about in the book is making an all-grain batch with a 20-minute mash and a 20-minute boil.
Wow.
And it works great.
Okay. I think this is important.
It does.
I think this is super important, and exactly for the reason that you said. It's actually those of us who have been homebrewing longer that need this advice. And maybe more specifically, those of us who are getting on in the years and have families and are busy and have a lot going on, and we end up brewing less.
Right.
And so I think this is a tool maybe to get us back to brewing more without taking up more time.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You
know. Cut into the chase.
John was our technical editor for it, so I was glad to have him not come back and say, you guys are just full of crap.
Wait, were there times that he came back and said,
of course
you're,
he did. But you know what? When we came back with our point of view, he was very reasonable about things and only said, you're stupid a couple times.
In a very kind way.
In a very kind way. You know, John.
And I'm sure it was around the water.
Exactly.
Yep.
My good friend and co-host Nick Ziegler has joined us on the program. I'm sorry we had to start without you, but
no, it's you know honestly that's probably a better choice in life in general.
Start without you.
That's what I was saying.
Oh, gee, thanks, Denny.
No problem. Nick.
So, one of the things that Denny, you told this to me many years ago. Sorry, folks, the microphone was I had misplaced it. Denny, you said this to me many times early on, and I think we've discussed this before, you and I at least have. I'm not sure if we've discussed it on the podcast. We discussed it on yours, but not on this one. But we met over the internet approximately...
Nearly 20 years ago.
Actually,
there were dating sites that long ago?
Yeah. Well, you know, bearded...
You're just jealous.
Bearded braided hose mash tun seeks efficient fly sparger to
foreign its Right.
It's lonely, a little known Craigslist category, but it exists.
LonelyHomebrewer.com.
We met in LonelyHomebrewer.com. No. Yeah, well, maybe. I just needed some more copper nipples. We met in 1999.
That's about right.
On tastybrew.com. Mm-hmm. Back in the days, it still exists in the Wayback Machines, and the calculators still work, and they're still the best.
Oh, nice.
When you're talking about simplifying homebrewing, your first experiment, and we've discussed civilly as gentlemen about the methodology behind the decoction mashing experiment.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. Why the hell would you do a decoction mash?
Because you enjoy the process.
Okay. But
I used to steadfastly maintain there was no benefit to a decoction mash. You were wasting your time doing it. There was nothing there. And as I've gotten older, I've mellowed and moderated my views. Mm-hmm. And I now say, don't do a decoction mash because it will necessarily
improve your beer.
Do a decoction mash because you enjoy getting in touch with that history and doing the process.
And you're like doing this. A decoction mash, mm-hmm. Which is something that you should do if you have an excess of beer and you need to make sure to baste the brisket with a nice vinegar mop or a spray.
You got to spend time with it.
And then you come back to the beer and continue doing that. That's sort of, it's relaxed, don't worry, have a homebrew.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, check out the book and you can learn all about simplifying your homebrewing. It's published by Brewers Publications. Congratulations. I think they're the best.
Thank you, man. We're real happy to be with them.
You've got three books out now.
That's correct.
Simple Homebrewing being the latest. Experimental Brewing, another great book.
Thank you.
And what was
Don't forget
third?
Homebrew All-Stars.
Homebrew All-Stars.
There
starring
we go.
Nathan Smith.
I was wondering.
Among a cast of many others, but thank you for that shout out, Danny.
Thank you for putting up with us and getting involved.
No problem.
All right. You can go to brewerspublications.com and check it out and get yourself a copy of Simple Homebrewing. Today, as I mentioned, we are here to talk about unloved hops.
Our hops from history.
I don't know about unloved, man. I love them.
And we all do. Like I said, I only use it in the sense that they don't get like the social media love. They don't get a selfie. Right. They're not posted on Instagram anymore.
Yeah, hashtags.
Nobody says hashtag Fuggles. Yeah. It just doesn't happen.
It's not Citra on a stage with a guitar or something.
Some more UK brewers into your Twitter stream.
And then they, So
it's all ironic.
I wanted to talk about this because not because we're all old, which we are, and we're
some of us older than others. Is that what you're getting at?
No, not even that, Denny.
Our livers are definitely all in the 60s.
I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, once we get to a certain age, I just lump us all together.
Okay.
And I'm in that lump, man. I wanted to talk about it with you all because we've used these hops extensively, both as a primary focus in our beer and as a secondary focus in our beer. And
I need to add some more hops to this.
Yeah.
And here's what you have.
Let's be honest. Absolutely. Kitchen sink.
And I'm not even going to go so far as to define all of the hops that might fall into this category. Instead, I'm going to let us bring up the hops that we think fall into this category. And I'm going to start us right off with the sea hops. I mean, why wouldn't we start with these?
Right.
Obviously, still widely loved and used, hence the odd name Unloved. However, no one's saying, "Oh, I just made my latest IPA with this new awesome Cascade." what a brewer might mention, though, is how great a crop of Cascade was this year or something like that. So why don't we just talk about the impact and the importance of the sea hops in home brewing and craft brewing. Yeah. Do you think that Sierra Nevada was the one that kind of introduced us to this?
Them and, and Anchor with Liberty.
Okay.
I'm going to. Liberty did it. Liberty put it on the table. And Sierra Nevada
took the ball and ran with it.
Sierra Nevada made her shine.
Yeah. With Cascade Nevada, in particular. In
Exactly. Well, Cascade in particular. Fritz and the team and so many wonderful people at Anchor. So you get, Chris.
Let's stick to the hops. They're fine and all, but the people are fine. But they made these hops shine.
They're both showcases to Cascade.
Very different way, which is really important to talk about.
So, and Anchor had like a special part of their brewery set aside. I remember, at least in the old days, to make Liberty. Like, they took that beer very seriously and that was one of the first beers, if I'm not mistaken, in 1976 or so, that really showcased Cascade.
Yeah, right.
And obviously, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is founded on that. Aroma.
As far as I'm concerned, Anchor Liberty and Sierra Nevada Pale Ale kind of defined the American beer.
Mm-hmm. The new American Pale Ale IPA.
Yeah, right.
Cascade, and
the new world hop character.
To this day, although it's trendy to diss Crystal Malt and those older hop varieties and stuff like that, I still firmly believe you cannot have an American Pale Ale or IPA without 10% Crystal Malt or Cascade hops.
Yeah.
Well, Denny, what else from Crystal?
Well,
this is the young versus, well, the younger, broken.
I'm only going to say this about that comment.
Yes.
The only thing that's arguable is the crystal.
Yes.
You're going to find camps, but I don't think anyone's going to argue with you that a sea hop belongs in those beers.
Yeah, and the crystal absolutely does too, because those legacy beers had it in it.
And
those beers defined it. Now, an interesting thing is, a few years ago at Great American Beer Festival, Sierra came home with no medals for the pale ale, and were told that it was out of style.
It was too malty.
Yeah.
What the hell? Yeah.
Sorry about the style we invented for you.
Yeah, yeah. Because so many other people have taken it and run with it and taken out the crystal and added loads of other hops and stuff like that. So Sierra Nevada Pale Ale was deemed to be out of style when compared to all
of them. I can imagine those tasting notes back from the GABF. They just have them framed.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I mean, they were talking about when I was there for beer camp a few years ago, and everybody thought it was just really funny.
I hope Ken has like a rodeo belt buckle for it, because I mean, that would just be perfect.
Yeah. Well, this is exactly the point of this conversation, that a beer like that, with the hops that we're talking about, the hops that defined, in fact, I think it was you that just now said, like, the new age
new world hop character
can now be out of style.
Yeah, right.
Which
exactly.
is kind of amazing.
Yeah, well, all these other varieties have come about and they're new, and so they become trendy and people start using them, and you know, there's some other really great hops that you can make pale ale with and IPAs, but if you want to make the classic American pale ale or IPA, it's got to have sea hops.
I mean, you know,
Nick, you remember 20 years ago when we were on Tasty Brew, people would ask about a recipe for an American
Cascade
IPA.
Columbus,
and people would just say, you know, here's your malt bill, and then put sea hops in it.
Yeah,
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 you know? Yeah. 30-30-30.
Yeah,
it was 30 IBUs from the boil, 30 IBUs from halfway through. And then 30 units of hops, liters, whatever the hell you want to add.
30 of something.
Just add a shit ton of them at the end and in the dry hop.
But that was about it, man. You put in 30% at the beginning, 30% in the middle, 30% at the end.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing is that because we've had all these new trendy hops that have their own delicious, you know, flavors and aromas to them, people have forgotten how solid these older hops are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason we used them in everything, and it's not just because we didn't have any other choices.
Sure.
It's because it worked and it made damn great beer.
And let's just say that we've covered this on the show before. Nick is the one who taught me this. you know, just because we're maybe not talking about them or using them as the predominant hop, they're still always a place for them as lifter hops. Mm-hmm. I think that's a term I think I learned from you, something that just lifts things up. So whereas in the past, actually in the present too, but you know, they were the primary. They made Sierra Nevada stand out, and they might still do that in a new beer, but the, you know, the Citras and the Simcoes of the worlds are going to take over. They still have a place as a lifter, right?
Even if you're using those.
Even if you're using the new hops.
As an example, one of the best ways to use Sabro, which was HBC 438, as Vinny alluded to earlier in our presentation, that I believe will be available, as Ron Mexico, it's a Neo-Mexicanas hop. It is extremely intense in a lot of aromas. Pineapple, lime, coconut, and a lot of American oak dill character. Some of its sisters have some more of that character. Uh-huh. But when you combine it with about 10 or 20% Cascade and about 10 or 20% Simcoe, it flips itself up. Mm-hmm. And it just really opens up, and it takes away from some of the characters. It really helps accentuate the fruity character and the Pina Colada beach character of that hop. And I'm trying to figure out in the lab why this is. I have no idea.
It's like essential oils maybe reinforcing each other somehow in a way that's not understood yet, or, so you have esters, or
there's so many different things. So essential oils is actually it will contain esters, thiols, sesquiterpenes, blah 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 blah, everything. Right. So really, what we're looking at is we're looking at trying to figure out relations that are synergistic, antagonistic, or separate. And so separate means they can both coexist independently. Synergistic means they amplify each other in one way or another, and antagonistic means they cancel each other out. And the real cluster of the cluster fugget, or the fug and chug it, which is a different brand, is that we don't know what's happening. And we're trying to figure it out. So you can see that a single hop will both act as a lifter and a suppressant.
Yeah, of other
brands. A lifter of positives and a suppressant of negatives. Mm-hmm. Whereas another one will be a lifter of 2/3 of the positive and 1/3 of the negatives, but suppress everything else. So what the hell is going on?
So somebody who can only get 20% of the hype hop that they want could essentially possibly blend some of these other old school hops that are still awesome. Lift those and get more mileage out of the.
Well, you're not gonna lift them to the same character.
Understood.
You're gonna lift a specific spike. So I talk about Chinook Crystal, for example, is an excellent example. Add Crystal. So Laurel already has the highest linalool that we have recorded in the last 2 years of harvest, which is kind of crazy because it's like 30% more than anything else. It's nuts.
Okay.
Well, Crystal's got some interesting characteristics with a lot of geraniol and some other characters that are going to match that well. So does 692. Crystal and Laurel is like a citrus ice pick into your eyeball. Whereas you taste
that bright.
I guess. It's very bright. Thank you. There you
right.
Brought it back to the visual metaphor.
Yeah, John's more pleasant.
it's delicious. however, when you combine it with other hops, for example, you're going to end up with a much more tropical but some other character. You're going to accentuate the caryophyllene, which is going to be a black pepper or sort of a green peppercorn, not green pepper. Yeah, green pepper is different. Yep. That's all going to be in the bract, by the way. You get these different characters that are additive and synergistic at the same time, and it's incredibly confusing.
Okay.
And that's what I love about some of the old hops. And Denny, you helped me. When you put up all your information for Denny's Rye-PA, which I'm sure all of us know,
right.
Yep, which is banging, and everybody should brew it, and just because I want to get it in my local bar, please, y'all, is also that Eroic and Bullion, and this was mentioned in a previous podcast with Steve and...
Were those two different words?
Those are two different hops. Eroica.
Okay.
and Bullion.
Got it.
And these are two old hops.
Are there? Is there any acreage of those? Either of those left?
No.
Did not think so.
I was
going
to say, I haven't seen Eroica.
I haven't seen Eroica since the late 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a hold of some in 2000, in the early 2000s.
No way.
But they were old. Right. But they still worked. And this is what's interesting. The real problem is that those two hops were disease sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't yield terribly well. So there's no, especially during the time period, there's no reason, like you've heard about Steve talk about this before, there's no reason to grow those. But Eroica and Bullion together create the most intense mulberry blackberry character.
Hmm.
And that's what I see in the middle of Simcoe and some other things. So if you find some older hops, not Eroica and Bullion, but perhaps their parents or children, Fuggles.
Nugget
has a ton of character.
Yeah.
Has a ton
underappreciated, but could fit a role like this, perhaps.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Ton of middle fruit character.
Always one of my
not middle fruit, yeah. But middle fruit.
Right.
They bump that up. And so I've tried to make the beer that I made with those originally. Can't make it anymore with Eroica and Bullion. So I got to figure something else out.
Yeah.
Okay, Simcoe's got somewhere I want. Cluster's got something. Nugget's got something. Chinook has this weird capacity to just bump up the fruitiness. Recently discovered this year, Thiols. Stan Hieronymus wrote some articles on this. This is really important. Yeah. We're actually validating this right now through experiments. But there's a lot of stuff going on in these varieties.
Sure.
And you can combine them in completely different ways.
Which is why they're still so valuable.
And that's the point.
So I want to bring up hops that maybe people don't even remember the name of. And Denny, I asked you to remind me of what I asked the wrong guy to remind me of the last show, because your mind is like mine and we forget everything.
I'm old.
It was Gold something.
Brewer's Gold.
Brewer's Gold.
Ah.
And the other one I was thinking, I'm going to throw it out now before I forget about it, is Falconer's Flight.
That's a blend. Right. That has a lot of, well, the original blend had a lot of the classic C hops
that
we're talking about. But the blend was never consistent.
That was 17 C's.
I see. What about Brewer's Gold? Is that something that we still care about?
You know, I have only used Brewer's Gold a few times because when I got into brewing, it was like at the end of Brewer's Gold.
Back in the late 90s again. It was there, but not much.
So, I think that I remember like a couple recipes in Charlie's book that use them that I made. But again, it was a lot of years and a lot of beers ago, and I don't remember much about them.
I don't think that's... So, you know, I started homebrewing in 2005, and it was never a thing. That was never... I know the name, but I've never touched it. I've never smelled it.
Right. When I started in 98, they were hard to find but available. And by 2000, I don't remember seeing them.
Okay.
Danny, you started brewing in 98?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, when he was 17.
Yeah, I wish.
I started like... That's the year I started.
98 is a good year. Same here.
Which is insane.
Yep.
Because I looked at you as the person who's been brewing for so long.
He's calling you old, is what he's doing.
I brewed a lot for quite a number of years.
So I want to. Okay. Give me a hop that I'm not thinking of, Daddy. Can you give me something that, Justin, in your past?
Willamette, I think, is one that doesn't get enough love these days.
Okay.
Mount Hood.
Mount Hood. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, that's a good one.
Milo's Alt.
That's right. I thought of that because Nick mentioned my rye IPA recipe, which is a combination of Columbus and Mount Hood.
Okay.
At various times in it. And one of the things that I will always remember is John Meyer coming out to my house.
From Rogue, yeah.
He was like a member of our homebrew club.
Cool.
So on like Learn to Homebrew Day, I was having a big club event at my house, and he stopped by, and I had just gotten done developing the rye IPA recipe, and I gave John a glass of it, and he took a sip and looked at me and said, "This is the flavor I've been looking for."
Oh.
And he asked me, which already had me like, 6 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
And he asked me about the hops, and I said, "Well, it's Columbus and Mount Hood." And he went, "I never would have thought about
those two together."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a really symbiotic relationship, using that very aggressive American hop with the mellow German-inspired American hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it kind of set me off on a series of explorations with other combinations, And I ended up with a porter recipe that uses Cascade and Tetanang, which is really off the wall and just works great.
Right.
So, well, you know? Yeah.
I love this.
So, you know, so, I mean, so all of those are kind of like hop varieties you don't see used a lot anymore.
Right.
And it's not because there's anything wrong with them. It's not because they don't give you great results. It's because people grab the new and trendy. Yeah.
And I think that's worth noting, the, you saying that, Denny, because you're right. It's not that these... It's not that they went bad. It's not that we didn't like their characteristics. We just like new shit.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Exactly. So
well, you know, and it falls firmly into the old man yells at cloud area.
Get off my lawn.
Florida man yells at cloud.
Yeah.
But, you know, Florida. I wish I get a lot of from Drew. But, you know, that has actually nothing to do with it, you know?
You're right.
What it has to do with is that people jump on the bandwagon as something new and trendy at the expense of forgetting what's solid and valuable.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about New England IPAs?
You don't want to go there.
Oh, good Lord.
Might be a different show.
Oh, man. Don't get me started.
Well, yeah.
You can cut that, Jason.
That's fine, because I've got the same question for John Palmer. I asked Denny, you know, give me some hops that you knew and loved. If there's one I haven't thought of, even better. But just ones that you knew and loved.
Yeah, my favorite hops from when I first wrote How to Brew were Nugget, Galena, Cascade,
Galena.
Liberty.
Liberty. Liberty. Oh, yeah.
Another one of the Mount Hood Crystal group.
Yeah.
Those were the, you know, the American versions of your Hollow Top Middle Frew and Tetanang and so on, that, you know, trying to capture some of that lager hop character, you know, with the so-called noble hops and so on. And those all worked really well together. I always, you know, in brewing my pale ales, my home brewing was predominantly American pale ale and American wheat, which was designed to mimic Pete's Wicked Lager.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Which
I don't even remember Pete's Wicked Lager.
Dude, before they
I was
sold
a
out,
Wicked
they were
guy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, before they got bought, they were amazing.
Yeah, early on, it was an amazing beer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Pete's Wicked was, you know, early 90s.
Sure.
I had been brewing for a couple of years. And when I had Pete's Wicked Lager, which was all Liberty, I believe, or a lot of Liberty in the finish, you know, just such clean, noble pine floral kind of thing going on with the Liberty hop. That's what I started brewing that beer very frequently.
Okay. So it sounds like you're kind of in my wheelhouse, too. To this day, I still enjoy earthy, noble,
EKG
and pine, EKG.
Yeah.
Those are the characteristics I enjoy.
Fruity and spicy. Yeah. Or spicy.
Fruity is not. Spicy, yes. Yeah.
Earthy,
fruity is
earthy.
Not.
Fresh EKG is fruity.
Right.
Okay.
But what you get.
Well, I'm just talking characteristics in general. I, to this day, will take earthy, piney, over fruity, estery, any day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my pale ales, you know, everybody knows I'm just a pale ale nerd. It's almost all I drink. I either drink a pale ale or a German style lager.
Right.
Yep.
And in both of those beers, I kind of want the same hop characteristics. I want some noble, earthy, piney, over fruity, almost any day.
Yeah.
472, dude. I'm going to get you some juice this week.
Well, Denny and I were talking earlier, and we were saying, you know, when we started homebrewing, and I guess maybe more for me, because I started around 89, 90, and then I was brewing a lot in the early 90s, you know, you would have people, you know, give you their beer and say, you know, what do you think of this? And oh, you know, it's too phenolic. You know, check your fermentation temperature, or it's too estery.
Well, it's all,
you know,
German defined.
Well, yeah,
or continental defined, I guess.
Some of them, but I mean, you know, tasting each other's homebrew, you're saying, this beer is too estery. You know, pitch more yeast, or it always went back to the fermentation.
Let's, sure.
And so with the growth of very fruity hop characters, and then Belgian IPAs. They never appealed to me because, to me, I always associated them with bad homebrew.
Yeah.
You know, it faults and, you know.
I'm not far off from you. In starting the Brewing Network, estuary was one of my first words that I learned, right? from Jamil. Jamil's a great guy to learn from. I really enjoyed in the beginning tasting beers with Jamil, and one of the reasons I enjoyed it is he kept saying, "Whatever you taste isn't wrong." So I was intimidated, right? Because he's Jamil and all you guys, meeting all you guys. But he's like, this: whatever you taste isn't wrong. You might not have the word to describe it, but
or you might not have the same word that I have.
Yeah, yeah, but it doesn't mean it's wrong. And anyhow, estuary was something that stuck with me very early on because I didn't enjoy it
because of bad homebrew again.
Yeah. So I think it's very interesting that you point this out, Palmer. That as hops become a little more fruity and estery, us old school guys associate them a little bit with poor fermentation.
Yeah,
right.
And it takes a shift in mindset to say, okay, this is a good beer. It is clean. This character is coming from somewhere else.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to have to drop a bomb on this conversation because the fruitiness that you get from a stressed yeast fermentation or a POF positive or perhaps a weak membrane strain, like I'm just going to say it, London Ale 3, Conan, so on and so forth.
Okay.
That the reason they have such an expressive character is we are looking into this, but we believe that it has to do with membrane strength. So there's a lot of permeability going on. But the esters that are yeast derived versus those that are hop-derived are very different.
True.
And when you have a tremendous ester character from yeast, you typically also have a, perhaps, in some of the more refined forms, you get like a 25% of that aromatic character being POF, so phenolic.
Right.
Right.
Okay, phenolic off-flavor character. And so there's a spiciness underneath it. You get that those esters that are sort of let's go with an indeterminate cloud or statistically unrepresentable cloud.
Yeah.
When you get them from hops, they're very, very clear. And there's a difference between hop esters in the way they express in the beer. They're chemically, they are the same. But so, when they come out, they are attended by a different group of compounds. And the ones from stressed fermentations, high POF positive fermentations, or high membrane permeable, or perhaps, so we say, expressive yeast strains.
So stress fermentations that have other, there are going to be other issues probably like aggressive phenols or maybe even fusels or something like
that. There could be.
Why does that really matter if you don't like the beer?
And Denny, that's kind of where I was going to go. I was going to say, I appreciate knowing the scientific difference. Mm-hmm. However, if it's what it infers to me, that's what matters.
It carries that baggage.
You're not drinking the science. You're drinking what's in your glass.
Exactly. Correct. So
if it doesn't taste good, it's not good.
Right. But I mean, it's like John talking about associating that fruitiness with off flavors.
Yes.
I don't do that so much as I don't like the flavor of those beers because they're too sweet for me.
Yeah.
And I first discovered this when I went to Sierra Nevada Beer Camp down in Chico. The last thing they do on the last day is they give everybody a box of gallon Ziploc bags and take you to the hop freezer and say, go for it.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And they had a bunch of, I can't remember the number, but it's what later became Mosaic.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I brought home a couple gallon Ziploc bags just stuffed with those.
Nice.
They were really high on them there at Sierra Nevada. And I came home and I made a couple beers exclusively with those. And even though they calced out to like 70 IBUs, these beers came off sweet because of all the fruity character in it. Same reason I didn't like Citra when it first came out, all that kind of stuff. What I've since discovered is exactly what we were talking about a few minutes ago. Combine those with something else.
Right. Sure.
And the interaction, Citra and Chinook, right on.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a great combo.
Because Chinook has a bunch of stuff that Citra doesn't have.
Yeah.
Kind of back to this contrasting.
You know, and again, slap from the Chinook.
And synergistic.
Yes.
Synergistic, yes. Thanks both.
You get the slap from the Chinook, and then kind of the hand holding back from the fruitier hops like the citrus.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, the caress. He's so good.
I know, isn't he? This is why.
That's right. Yeah.
Was he your technical editor or your romance editor? I don't know.
That's a different book. That's the next book.
Yeah.
Homebrew love.
Something that rhymes. Yeah.
So, and I'm glad that you bring this up. This is exactly what we're talking about. And so that some of those to those of us who are old school will perceive them as too fruity. It doesn't. I actually enjoy knowing the scientific difference, but the perception is ultimately what matters. And if it's coming across as fruity or sweet,
it doesn't matter where it comes from.
It doesn't. However, I do like that we've understood that it's coming from hops and not malt, because at least now we're understanding what hops are contributing. Yeah. I want to get us to a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about my favorite hop, which you just mentioned. So hang in there. It's the Hop and Brew School podcast, and we'll be back right after these words.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the Hop and Brew School podcast. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. My guests today are, I don't even know if I introduced you in the beginning. Nathan Smith.
No love for me, Justin.
Brewing Network.
Thank you, sir.
Nathan, let's give Nathan a hand.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, it's just, you know,
huzzah, huzzah, Excelsior.
Nate, you're such a Brewing Network staple that I just forget you're there.
Which
sometimes.
Is good. Yeah. I can hang out on the mic with you all day. No problem.
You know what? When we forget you're there, you're like a cascade, my friend.
Hold up and reinforce the whole group.
Super important.
That may be one of the nicest things that's ever been said about
one. Thank you. That is super cool. And one thing about Cascade, which you mentioned earlier, an IPA, like no one would balk at an IPA with Cascade, and some people would insist on an IPA with Cascade. So the first time I did a commercial beer ever with Roger Davis back at Triple Rock, he took one pellet of Cascade. It wasn't in the recipe. He took one pellet of Cascade and he threw it in the kettle. He's like, Nate, every IPA has to have Cascade.
It's IPA.
Yes!
I love it. I love it.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Also joining me today, my good friend John Palmer, author of How to Brew. You can go to howtobrew.com and get his latest edition. If you don't have it already, you need
you
it.
You should.
You need it. That's right.
I don't care if you're an experienced. I don't care if you're an experienced brewer. You need that book.
Yeah. Well, especially because he cites me as a source. So.
Ah, there we go. And my other good friend, Denny Kahn, author of the new book, Simple Brewing, hanging out with us today. And a podcast host of do you have two podcasts now?
We have Experimental Brewing and we have The Brew Files, and it's one or the other every week.
Okay.
Is The Brew Files like The X-Files?
That's what Drew wants. Actually, he's trying to get me to do a ukulele version of the X-Files theme.
Nice.
Do it.
I'm working on it.
Nice. Search Experimental Brewing in your favorite podcast aggregator, and you'll find Denny's podcast there. So today, we are talking about... I'll change it now for your sake, Nick. Legacy hops.
Thank you.
All right. And before the break, I mentioned that we were going to talk about my favorite, which Denny had mentioned, and that's Chinook.
I love Chinook.
You know, I didn't even know I loved Chinook.
Right.
To be honest with you,
I have to jump on that as well. I mean, it was a hop that I initially shied away from, but then you start tasting beers that you love, and people say, "Oh yeah, there's Chinook in that." And you realize that it is one of those integral hops like Cascade, like others, that supports the whole character.
It does. And when it was described, you know, so much, at least for me, of what I think we attach to has to do with the story behind it. Yeah. And Chinook to me was told to me about an English hop that's an old English hop, and the Americans make it great and whatever. And it never related to me. It just didn't until exactly what you said. I just started finding out that it was in all of my favorite beers. Yeah. And even very recently, I got to brew with Firestone Walker, and he laid out all these hops on a table to decide what we were going to dry hop this beer with. And there was a lot of new school hops on that table. You know, some Citra and some Simcoe and so on and so forth. And Chinook was one of them, though. And lo and behold, every person in the room, our favorite hop was that Chinook. And I don't know if it's a Firestone gets the best batch of Chinook ever, but
yeah, well, you know, and unfortunately, people don't think of Chinook as a finishing hop, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It has always had a reputation as a bittering hop because of the high alpha and stuff like that,
and an aggressive one, like
yeah,
too. Like,
yeah, yeah. But the first beer I ever won an award for in 1999 was an American brown ale dry hopped with Chinook.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, I didn't know what I was doing. I just figured, let's try it.
Try it out.
What happens.
Yeah.
And it's like, to this day, you know, 18 years later, I still make that recipe exactly the same.
Yeah. Okay. See?
The difference, though, is that the last time I made it with Chinook that came from Michigan.
Hmm. And so talk to me about that.
It was completely different than the Pacific Northwest Chinook.
Really?
Now, when we're talking about all these legacy hops and the beers that they go into that help define the American style, we're thinking of hops that are grown in the Pacific Northwest.
Sure, we're assuming they're here, yeah.
Right. So, you know, and we've all heard that terroir plays a part in hops and stuff. When I was in New Zealand a couple years ago, we went to a hop farm there, Max Hops. You know, they're really well, they're good friends of the Yakima Chief families. And they were telling us that they got Cascade rhizomes to plant down there, and they turned out so different they had to call them Taihiki because people would be expecting something completely different.
Interesting.
Some friends in Michigan sent me some Chinook that were grown there. Whereas here in the Pacific Northwest, Chinooks are piney and they've got some dankness and some sharpness to them. These Chinooks were pineapple.
Mm-hmm. I would never associate that with Chinook.
Yeah, me either. And they were still great. So it's kind of like when you're talking about these hops, you can't talk about them in a monolithic way.
Yeah,
you know?
I love that you're bringing this up. I mean, essentially, we're talking about terroir. We're talking about climate. Mm-hmm. And it is... I mean, that's a whole other episode, really, to talk about how the hops that we know and love could really become something completely different grown somewhere else.
Yeah, it's like making an old hop into a new hop.
Yeah, yeah.
Just growing it somewhere else.
This is something that is tremendously interesting and important to us, but the problem is that I would really, really like, and I'm doing this on behalf of Jason Perrault, please stop using the term terroir.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it means dirt in... Basically, it's like the dirt matters, and it's not. It's climatology. Most important is actually the microbiome of the soil.
Dirt.
I agree.
No, that is the bugs in the dirt.
Now you've got your science hat on, and I'm only going to disagree with you on this point in the sense that...
Everybody else, it's dirt.
The layman. And by the way, I'm smart enough at least to understand that we're talking about what the dirt is comprised of. So I'm happy to talk about the elements, the nutrients, the bacteria. I know that that's all in there. But why is terroir, you know, why can't I just use a word that relates to us all to encompass all those things?
Because it oversimplifies it to the point where people think about it as being just the minerality. How do you describe white wines?
Well, I always thought of wine terroir as being the
all region, of those things.
Yeah, the region, the soil,
it's the difference between a scientific definition and an artistic definition.
Yeah, what would I use instead? Let me ask you that. That would relate to most folks like me.
How about defining it by the character?
That's already too... Go ahead. It's already too specific, I think. For the layman.
Well, okay, no, let's forget about the 97 wine shelves, because, I mean, as amazing that is for our lives now, as opposed to it was in the 80s.
I just want to point out that every guest just leaned forward on the table toward Nick. We're in a very aggressive stance. Like, go ahead. Yeah, why don't you tell us?
Let's hear about it.
I'm about to get attacked.
Yeah, no one else can see this. I had to point it out.
How about you say this is from the tropical fruit character? So let's even make it more generic rather than more specific.
You know,
this is a palm fruit character. Shush.
No,
that's fine. But I actually think we're now talking about two different things.
Yep.
I think that
I brought it back to the expression and interpretation of it.
Sure, but that's only one characteristic. We're actually trying to do better to encompass all the characteristics saying terroir.
Yeah, to me, and that's exactly right. To me and to most people, terroir is not just the dirt. It's the entire growing experience.
It's the place. It's the rainfall.
That's how I think of it.
Right. What about the farmer?
Yes,
of course.
That's part of it.
Ah, but is he tied to that particular region?
Well, yes.
Why?
That's where his farm is?
Yeah. But tradition?
I don't know. In YCH, we're talking about 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th generation farms, so I'd call them terroir.
But we treat each variety differently.
Yeah. This might be another episode.
Yeah, I think so.
I have derailed this one well and truly.
No. Nick is going his own direction, and we have no idea where that is.
Not only that, we're like ready to throw daggers about this.
Yes, let's go.
No, but it shows there's so much more to discuss.
Yeah,
there is another episode.
And that we will do with, you know what, with farmers. In fact,
I will step out of it to make sure that I don't
that it's unbiased, yeah.
Well, not unbiased, but at least not biased by me. I freely admit that I am a loudmouth. So,
well,
that would be an interesting show.
We can go through so many varieties and so many things about legacy hops, but we are running out of time. I want to bring up one that I think is on the fringe. It's one that makes me feel old, that I feel like it can go into the legacy hop. It's certainly a hop that is grown a bunch right now. It's a hop that's in demand. But it's a hop that when it came out was like the thing. It was the Simcoe. So everyone was talking about it. Now I think everyone likes it and uses it and doesn't talk about it. And it's still like a dominant, it's a fancy hop. It's Amarillo.
That's always a new one to me.
Is it still new, right?
I'm the it's same way. Variety. I think of Amarillo as a new hop.
So here's...
2000.
Yeah, right.
It was introduced then. Yes.
And so it's almost 20 years old. And the reason I bring it up as this, I tend to think of it like you two as well, except that I remember when it came out as a popular hop.
Yeah.
It was my favorite instantly. We talked about it on the Brewing Network.
Oh, yeah.
Every brewery absolutely. I visited was like, oh, that has Amarillo in it. It was the Simcoe.
Yeah.
It was Simcoe before Simcoe was Simcoe.
Right.
Exactly right.
And now it's like this subtle, everyone still wants it. They just don't talk about it, right? There's no hashtag Amarillo.
It doesn't have the hype like it used to.
So I think it fits into our discussion because of that. It's still grown in great quantity, right, Nick?
Yes.
It's still purchased in great quantity, but no one's going, hey, check out my latest Amarillo IPA.
Right. Well, and that's because we have all these other new kids on the block.
Yeah.
And this gets to like something that I wanted to bring up, which is, what's the best music?
Okay.
Right?
Obviously, my opinion.
Yes, that's it. For every single person, the best music...
You listen to the news.
The best music is the music they grew up with.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Of course.
And the same way with hops. You know, I started brewing when Cascade and Chinook and Willamette and Centennial and all those were just hugely popular, and every beer was defined by them. And so I still see those as like my base hops,
right?
You know? Whereas if you started brewing in the last 5 years, you're going to be in love with Citra and
Simcoe's your base.
Simcoe's
the base, and maybe even like that's dad's hop. Yeah. It's still cool, but that's like dad's hop.
Exactly. And Mosaic, and you're not even going to be thinking about these older ones.
Yeah,
just like you guys don't think about music from the 30s and 40s.
right. Yeah.
And so
Robert Johnson, come on, dudes.
Well, the beginning.
That's different.
Well, you make an excellent point.
Yeah. It's what you get used to and become kind of like intrinsic to you, and those are the best hops.
Sure. Yeah, you're right, and I'm glad that we can all agree that the Beatles are the best band that ever lived.
I'd be there.
No, okay. I got a couple of daggers in the back alley.
A couple of notes. We were talking at the break. We had mentioned Brewer's Gold, and Nick wanted to make sure that we know that if you liked Brewer's Gold, you should probably check out El Dorado.
Yeah, they're very, very Very similar hops.
Okay. Cool. So check that out if you liked it. Brewer's Gold.
So we talked about some of the other ones that were the older bittering hops like Magnum and all that stuff. Magnum, there was a big experiment done. I believe it was at CBC.
Yeah.
And it was released, and everybody sort of brewed a beer with Magnum.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good hop.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, oversaturate your beer and all that stuff. And it's actually become a problem for the hop industry because there's not enough Magnum to satisfy everybody's clean bittering needs.
Sure.
So right. They're trying to breed other ones for it. So it's kind of interesting for that. But when you think about old hops, if you really want to think about old hops, let's mm-hmm. talk about old European hops. Hallertau, Mittelfrüh,
mm-hmm.
Saaz, Tettnang, Perle, all these things. They all are still in high demand for some of these classic lagers that we all mm-hmm. you know, have identified as the example of the style because, you know,
sure.
they don't adventure, but they also perfect. So these brewers really know what they're doing. Well, there's a crazy friend of mine in Sweden, the Eck brothers. It's Christian, Frederick, and Andre, and they run Brekeriet. And they made a fully wild sour with their own crazy open house culture, which is fantastic. They make excellent beer. Dude dry hopped it with Mosaic and Saaz. I shit you not, it was the single best beer I had in 2018.
So old world spicy okay. character, noble,
uh-uh.
and new school.
Uh-uh.
So what did it come out as on the other side?
The bacteria did some weird shit to it.
So biotransformation, possibly?
I have no idea.
Right.
It may just be the asses, the different asses. And this is something that we've talked about before in different podcasts and also on different programs. But combining a new hop for that blueberry character with the Saaz and the spiciness somehow turned out into one of the fruitiest beers I've ever had. And it was like 4.6%, a lot of alcohol, not a lot of esterification going on, or esterification for the listeners, sorry. But it was absolutely phenomenal. And so combine a weird old hop an expressive new hop. Play with the ratios.
Yeah.
And you're going to get something completely different.
Which is why I like doing things like putting Vanguard maybe in IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
Or.
Interesting.
Santiam.
I'm
glad this comes up. It's high
Nate's favorite.
High little content, and it's Tettnang like.
Yeah,
it's a great hop.
Glacier.
There's probably like two growers left. Remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. Glacier, another one. Yes.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So this is, I think, one of the great takeaways from this discussion is that these hops are still very much loved and can be even more loved when combined with your newfangled. I'm allowed to use that. I'm at the age I can use that, right?
Yeah, totally you're old enough.
Yeah. With your newfangled hops, your mosaics of the world, combine them with your old favorites, and I bet you'll end up with some cool shit.
Pretty much, that's the takeaway. Please mix them. Please play with them.
Exactly.
And if it's awesome and it has been vetted by all the pickiest people in your homebrew club, go ahead and send it to me.
I
want a signed deposition everyone that is actually good.
Who cares about your homebrew club? If you like it, that's good enough.
You know what? You know, I like
that.
That
is the takeaway.
Yeah.
Brew the beer you want to make.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
You want a drink, sorry.
Yeah, you want a drink,
both.
And both. This is great. I feel like we can do this again. I feel like we should periodically check in about hops that are, you know.
I think that's great. And all of us can like kind of keep thinking about it and experimenting with old hops.
Yes.
And see what we can come up with.
Yes, these quote old hops.
Yeah.
My Amarillo that's from 2000.
Yeah.
Hey, 19 it's 19.
Raid my
almost ready to drink.
By the way, on that table of hops at Firestone Walker, when I said the Chinook was so impressive, the second most impressive one was Amarillo.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Right. Two great. I also think that somehow Matt contracts the best hops that anybody ever gets on planet Earth.
Well, if everyone's not competing for the hype hop, then maybe you can get really good quality ones of the other guys that are still around, right?
Right.
This is important to remember, and please, this is the hop guy talking, but Matt's favorite hop is not Nate's favorite hop.
Exactly.
It's not Justin's favorite hop.
Sure.
Although
yeah.
apparently it is.
right.
But it's certainly not Denny's and Nick's favorite hop. Everybody's got your taste, and you're not wrong. You're using the hop in the way you want to make the beer that you want to drink.
Yep.
That's what you got to focus on.
Yeah. Yep. I like that what we've learned is that I'm usually right. I think that's what we've learned today.
Even a blind squirrel finds it once in a while. Yeah.
I thought he just harvested the nuts at the bottom of the tree at midnight on July 4th.
Somebody keep Nick away from
me. I know. You know what? I can only wrangle him in so much.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Simple Homebrewing is available on the shelves today. You can get it on Amazon or go to brewerspublications.com and check it out. It's my friend Denny Kahn's new book. Thanks for being here, Denny.
Thank you, Justin.
That was a lot of fun. Of course, the best homebrew guide ever written by my friend John Palmer in multiple editions, How to Brew. You should get that. You can go to howtobrew.com right now and check it out. Probably also buy that on Amazon.
Oh, Justin, yeah. I got to tell you, you're a little bit off. It's not just the best homebrew guide. Pretty much every professional brewer, not every, but all the professional brewers who started at the same time as me or younger.
All have How to Brew?
All have it, yeah. And used it as their first year reference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you are responsible for a lot of people with liver damage.
I like to say women all over the world hate me.
You know, of course, the joke, and it's not entirely untrue, is that I don't brew that often, but you know what book of mine has tattered pages? It's How to Brew. That was always in my brew house also. Nathan Smith, he just hangs out and drinks beer.
I just hang out and drink beer. It's great. Thanks, Justin.
He also makes amazing beer.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, sir.
If you ever get a chance to try Nathan's homebrew, I always say this, and I'm reluctant to give this idea out there.
Yes.
And I mean this. I've thought about it a lot.
Okay, sir.
I'm being serious right now. If I were to open a brewery tomorrow,
yeah,
you'd be my brewer.
Well, thank you, Justin.
100%.
I'd take that as an insult, man. Yeah.
We'll have Cascade in those beers, by the way. We're going to make a pale ale, and it's going to have some Cascade.
I would never do that to a friend.
I think that's a job offer.
I think it is.
Well,
this is about to get serious off air here.
I better start the GoFundMe campaign now.
Yeah, that's true.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for hanging out with us. This is our final podcast from Hop and Brew School up in Yakima, Washington. It is not our final Hop and Brew School podcast, fear not, but it's my first year getting to attend this event. Nick, I want to thank you and your team here at YCH for making me feel at home and welcome. And if you've never been to Hop and Brew School, I recommend you come out here. Denny's been here a few times.
This is your sixth time.
Okay, I know that Nate's been here before.
Once before, 2011.
John, have you been here before?
I've been here before as well.
It's available. It's open to both professional brewers and home brewers.
It's awesome.
So it always happens this time of year. Late August, early September in Yakima, and when we mention it to you next year that tickets are available, go get them.
Yep.
It is basically the Brewing Man Festival. Yeah.
It's Brewing Man.
Brewing Man is September 28th at Mecca Grade.
Is that right? Is there already a Brewing Man? Because I was going to trademark it right now.
It's done.
Well. And as opposed to hops, it's on a barley farm.
Nice. So come out to Hop and Brew School. Thanks for tuning in. We've got a lot of great content coming up for you. Check out our other shows on thebrewingnetwork.com. We've got a show for everybody. You can find Denny Kahn's podcast by searching Experimental Brewing in iTunes or Google Play. And thanks for hanging out with us. Take care of yourselves and your beer.